Welcome to How to Build a Tent. This show is not about tent building, but it's how to make you successful. We are part of the Fight Laugh Feast Network. Go over to fightlaughfeast.com, become a member, put in HTBT in the memo field when you sign up, and you'll get one of these mugs for free, plus getting all kinds of other benefits, getting to see the shows that are being put out by all, the content of all the other shows that are putting out great content. It's really fantastic. I'm a big fan of just everything that they are doing over there. Give them some support, subscribe, get your free mug, put in HTBT in the memo field. If you want to reach out to me, Matt Williams, you can find me on the social media sites, How to Build a Tent. You can email me, matt@howtobuildatent.com. Love to hear from you. Don't forget, the business plan contest is coming quickly to an end. Make sure that you are not procrastinating and that you are being diligent with that. Today, I want to talk about the budget. Trump unveiled it yesterday in the 2020 budget. It's more like a battle line that is going to be drawn, and we're going to get into that in a bit. Want to talk about some exciting news first. At least for me, in my portfolio, I've been doing really well the past couple days after a terrible last week. Lost a lot, but in the last 2 days, made it up plus some. And I've been playing around with a strategy that I've probably shared before, but wanted to give a little update. It's been probably a month or so since I've talked about it. I've been using research companies, paying them, I think it's like $100 a year, maybe it's a little more than that, and having them do a lot of the research, and then I double check it, and they are basically suggesting what stocks to purchase. And instead of buying the stocks, which sometimes I do buy the stocks depending on what company it is and what my own research says and what I determine from my research, but what I've been doing is buying options, calls, puts, depending on what the advice is. And it's really been paying off for me. Now, option trading is a little more risky because they can expire worthless, opposed to a stock, which, unless you're like JCPenney's going bankrupt and then coming back out of bankrupt, really doesn't fluctuate like that. So you need to be a little more experienced in investing. But if for those of you that are a little more experienced, maybe haven't dabbled in options, that might be an interesting strategy for you to check out as well. Again, that is kind of something on the side. It's not my whole investment portfolio. I don't just do completely all options. A lot of times I use options as a hedge in case I think I'm putting too much in. Maybe I'm really optimistic about a stock, but I just want to cover myself. Maybe I'll buy some options to hedge against in case I'm completely wrong so I don't lose so much stuff. That's just something to think about. There's tons of different strategies. I would really encourage you to explore them as well. Another side note, before we get into the budget and kind of break down some of the things in it, I came across this email, very interesting, that the average American household has 300,000 items in their household, and that is double from 50 years ago. That's kind of amazing, and that kind of is a testament to marketing, I guess, and capitalism as a whole, that we're able to afford having that many more items. And I kind of just stopped and thought about it for a second. Is that good or bad? Is that something that we should be proud of or not proud of? And I really came away with, well, I guess it depends on what are you using those 300,000 items for. Yeah, that's a lot of items. I don't know if we have that many in our house. I'm like looking around to see in my office and stuff. But it really just depends on how you use it and what you're using it for. And another question that probably is more important in a lot of ways to an inanimate object like these items is it wealth producing or not? Is it something that is capital that is increasing your return on investment? Or is it something in the corner of your lot, in your yard, in your carport, whatever it is, that just sits there and you use it once or twice a year? How many of those items are actually growing your wealth versus how many items are just there, you use them every once in a while, but aren't really growing your wealth? Now, that is different than value. I am totally for buying things that don't produce wealth and make a return on investment. Obviously, there's some great things to get, like art. Maybe you won't necessarily appreciate unless you're in like fine art. Maybe you just really like this, you know, a couch. You need a couch. Not necessarily going to give you a return on investment. So there's things of value that you should buy. But it would be an interesting exercise to go through your 300,000 items in your house and ask yourself, is this wealth producing or is this making me poorer? And that's the two extremes, right? That's the two choices that you really have. Is this taking money away from me, my net worth, or is this adding money? Is it appreciating? Is it an appreciable asset or is it depreciating? And maybe you can get rid of some of those things and also not just get rid of things you don't need anymore, but have that decision in your head and have that thought in your head when you buy new things. Is this going to make me richer or poorer? Do I really need it? Is it adding value or does it really not add value to my life? Am I really going to use this once or twice a year? It's going to lose a bunch of its worth and I'm going to lose money on it or I'm never going to get money back from it. Those are the decisions you want to start making in your life to become wealthier. Poor people don't think like that at all. So those are kind of my two off the cuff thoughts I had today that I wanted to share with you. I should probably start like a separate podcast of just thoughts under 5 minutes or something like that, where I just come up with these things that I can share with you if you are interested in them, besides just the business and the economics and how to make you successful. So back to what I really want to talk about today is the budget that was unfolded. And it's really interesting because, you know, we have divided Congress now, so it's going to be a real battle. There's probably going to be a government shutdown, which is probably going to impact stocks, just as a little foreshadowing and warning for those of you in the investment world. But it's really interesting because it's going to be a big political battle. And politics really kind of set aside the facts and the realities of life. And they're just using the budget, and both sides do this, to further their agenda, to strengthen their party, to strengthen their backing, what they have from the, to whatever they're trying to go after. They're trying to strengthen that position so that they can be more effective in politics. It totally makes sense. I don't blame them. But the problem is that they're not addressing the real issues. And good old Trump, President Trump, I don't mean to be too disrespectful, like a lot of people are, he wants to do what's right. He's a very pragmatic person. I don't think he's idealistic at all, really. He's just a pragmatist. Wants to do what's right, and a lot of that is cutting the budget. But like what we've talked about before, in federal speak, in federal funds speaking, cutting the budget isn't even really cutting the budget. It's increasing the budget at a slower rate than planned, and that's considered a big cut. But he wants to cut around 5%, and I want to read a quote from Russ Vought, who's the budget director, and he says this, in the last two, referring to the budgets, President Trump and his administration have prioritized reining in reckless Washington spending. And we're going to get into that in a second. Back to the quote, though. The budget that we have presented to Congress and the American people, and this is in quote, a budget for a better America, embodies fiscal responsibility and takes aim at Washington's waste, fraud, and abuse. Now, in a lot of ways, I think the Trump administration has done a great job. I've talked about this before, of just cutting regulations, which there's a lot of waste and fraud that goes into that. You have to hire more people to write all these regulations, but they're cutting back. They're limiting their different departments, and Trump is basically putting in people to run it like a business should be. I mean, how many businesses actually cut money? They do it all the time. They cut their expenses to be more efficient, to be more profitable, to give more value to their shareholders. Governments don't really think that way. In fact, they want to spend as much money as they can. We've talked about that before. And Trump's trying to take a whole different mindset to government spending and government budgets. The problem is there has been a culture for hundreds of years, maybe 100 years, not hundreds of years, I don't want to be over the top. There's been this culture of not thinking that way. And it's really hard to turn a whole cultural shift, make a whole cultural shift of all these different agencies and departments under the executive branch, especially when you're only going to be there at most 8 years, maybe 4 years. I think a lot of people are probably assuming Trump's only going to make it this term and not win re-election. But with how the Democrats are doing, who knows? So it's going to be really hard for him, but he's doing his best, and I actually really appreciate that. I really appreciate a lot of what's in his budget. So what's in his budget? He wants to do a 5% reduction in non-defense discretionary spending. And again, we're going to get into this in a second of how bad the budget has been and how much in trouble we are from the spending, and how there's just such a huge deficit that is going to get us into trouble. And if we don't cut back on spending, which is the problem. The problem is not the tax income, the tax receipts that we get. That's not the problem. We'll see it in the charts in a second. It's how much we are spending. It doesn't matter how much money we bring in. At the rate that we are spending and what we're spending it on, it's going to get us in trouble, especially with the interest on our debt. Yeah, governments pay interest just like we do, and that's going to get us in trouble. He is projecting till 2034, 3% GDP growth year over year. Or no, I'm sorry. They would balance the budget in 2034 with projecting 3% GDP over the next 5 years. Projects 3.2% growth this year compared to 3.1% last year. And that's important because usually in the last couple budgets, he's been pretty close and he's still projecting growth. 3% growth this year is going to be amazing. Remember, under Obama, we weren't ever going to see 3% again, according to everybody, according to the experts, according to anybody who you talk to, we were never going to see 3% again. But we have seen 3%, arguably in the last 2 years. And we look like we're going to see it again in the coming year. So when you hear people talking about the economy is slowing down, it's not coming to a screeching halt. It's still going to be better than any of the last 8 years before Trump. So if you're planning and you're thinking about your strategy for your business and how you're going to operate and what is it going to be like in the future, it's still going to be looking pretty good. The CBO projects 2.7%. Now, the CBO is interesting because they do, I think, a decent job, but they can only do projections based on the information that they are given, and they don't factor in the effects of cutting regulations, for example, or the increase in revenue from tax cuts. They don't see the increased production that comes, the investment in businesses that come from these tax cuts. They just see that the percentages are going to be cut, and based on the numbers they have, that means that less income is going to come in, but it never works that way. I believe in the last 30 years, every time the tax rates have been cut, revenue has never gone down. It's either stayed the same or gone up. And why is that? Because when you cut taxes, it keeps more money in businesses and individuals' hands that are able to take that money and invest it, spend it on other things that create more value to the GDP, to the economy, to the communities around them. And it creates more taxable income, which means they make more money. And that has, and the CBO doesn't really take that into effect. So if they're projecting 2.7%, I'm thinking with if they continue cutting regulations, if they continue to have just a federal policy where they're not really raising rates, I could totally see 3.1%. I don't think that is crazy in my opinion. The Feds project 2%, but honestly, when have they ever been right about anything? And again, just to compare, in 2007, Donald Trump projected that there would be 2.3%. I think it was 3.3%. I think my notes are wrong. I could be wrong. Fact check me. But I'm pretty sure it was 3.2%. Yeah, it is 3.2%. I just had it wrong. Sorry, typo. And what actually was 3.5% GDP growth, which is phenomenal. And then in 2018, it was projected to be 3.1%. And the government numbers say it was 2.9% and 0.2% below the projected. But then Wall Street and how they calculate it, they calculated it right at 3.1%. So plus or minus 2%, he was right on last year as well. And again, even if he's off 2%, again, 2.9 is not like fantastic, but it's pretty close to 3%, which is what we had never had again. And of course, there is $8.6 billion for the border wall. Now you might be asking, I thought he was asking for 5%. That was one of his compromises trying to get the budget passed. And it's going to be really interesting to see how this battle goes down because we're getting really close to the election season. We already have a ton of Democrat candidates that are going to be running in the primaries, and they, you know, they're going to go off the deep end to the left. And some of them are in Congress, some of them are in leadership positions that are going to impact this budget. At least I'm pretty sure there are. I'm assuming there is. There usually is, congressmen. Don't quote me on that. And it's just going to be really interesting to see the Democrat leaders and how they position, how they argue with this. Because again, most likely we are going to have a government shutdown. And there's going to be a lot of politics that are going to come into play that aren't going to even factor in the two charts that we are going to look at next. And these are honestly scary to me. These are scary numbers. I'm not sure how this is going to be fixed. I know how to fix it. And a lot of people with common sense, business acumen, or anyone who manages your own family finances can obviously just apply those same things to the crisis with the deficit and the budget. But you know how it actually plays out in Washington. Everyone wants a payout. Everyone wants a handout. No one can touch any of the entitlements because that means you're going to lose votes because people are losing their benefits, and it's just a whole nightmare. But something is going to have to be done. Either we are going to have skyrocketing interest rates, or we are going to find a way to cut through the politics and do what is right and balance the budget like Trump's proposal does. And again, I don't think this is what is actually going to be passed. It's a battle line, and it might move forward and might move back. But it's a start and it's a stance. It's something to negotiate from, which I think he does really well, is he sets a line to negotiate from and then adjust. Okay, so this first chart is a line of the expenditures and the receipts. The bottom line that is in red is the receipts, and the top line is the expenditures. Now, you see in 2008 with the Great Recession, and also with the expanded expenditures of the government, there's just like this gaping hole that widens into the sea of no return, basically. Now, there's two things going on here. One, our economy took a drastic dive, and that is the result of the receipts going down because production slowed way down. But the other side is how much money was spent under Obama's administration, under the Democrat House and Senate, with Obamacare, with the bailout packages, and all of these different government expenditures, and it's never slowed down. It never stopped. You would think if the logic goes, you have to spend this money to get us out of this recession, then when the recession was over, the spending would come back down, but it never did. In fact, it went way up. And that's a big problem because, as you can see, before in 2002, 2006, and up to 2008, it was still bad. We were still spending more than we were taking in, which shouldn't be. But at least it was kind of growing at the same rate. And now we took a big hit, spent way more, and now we're kind of growing similar rates, but it's not closing the gap. And it's like, what is that? Maybe 5 or 6 times the gap as it used to be? Maybe less than that, maybe like 4 times as much. And that's a big problem that needs to be solved, because that means higher interest rates, harder to start a business, harder to get a home loan, harder to get a car loan, harder to buy things with interest. Like, you're going to have to go, and then you're going to have to just go straight to cash. And that is terrible for an economy. Our economy is built on being able to borrow money. That's how wealth is generated in our economy. So that's really scary. So what is all this spending? And I love this next chart I'm going to put up right now. It's the entitlements to consume all taxes. It's by the Heritage Foundation, a really conservative side. I'll just admit that. And we can see what are the big entitlements that are eating us up. Now, these are entitlements plus the cost of these entitlements. And that's why I wanted to show this. As you can see, Medicare, Medicaid, we see Obamacare subsidies, CHIP. Those are all large percentages of what needs to be tackled. Not just budget cuts in the government operations, in the different departments, in military spending. But this is one of the biggest issues. This is the biggest issue for us. And the problem is individuals aren't taking responsibility. Families aren't taking responsibility. The church community isn't taking responsibility. And the government steps in. And this is the result, where we have escalating expenditures in Medicaid, Obamacare, subsidies, Social Security, and Medicare. And I don't know if you ever are, I don't know. Wow, I did not even say an English sentence there. I don't know if you are my age or older, younger, but if you're in your 30s or younger, you're definitely not going to see Social Security, at least in the form it is now, because it's bankrupt. It's a big Ponzi scheme, and we are paying the baby boomers for their retirement and older. People are living longer. It's just not going to work. We are in big trouble with Social Security. Now, the cost of these programs, they never tell you the cost. Not only is it taxes that we're paying, that's a cost too, but the big cost for us is the interest. And you can see the revenues that are projected. Now, 18% is what they're kind of assuming, a straight line that there's not going to be any growth, which you could be argue here or there. But just with these projections, we'll see interest surpass the GDP in 2030. Now, it's coming up to 2020. We're in 2019 right now. That's not too far down the road where our interest is going to pass our GDP. It will compass all of our tax revenue that we get from our GDP growth. That's scary. And that is where the trouble happens, because our interest on our debt is going to be skyrocketing, and we're not even going to be able to pay that down. It's just going to be a never-ending cycle. For those of you with large student loans, you know what I'm talking about. If you're not making anything but the minimum payment, it's daunting. And this is really daunting. And again, what does this mean? When interest rates are high, people are less likely to lend money to the government. The government has to borrow money too, or they print it, and that causes inflation, which is a whole other issue. But when they borrow money to pay their current debts, to pay the interest off of old loans or their old bonds or old treasuries, that is going to increase loans for us as well. And that slows down the economy. So those are something to think about. This is why I am really excited about this budget. It's hopefully this brings some of the issues that we are facing to light, even if Trump doesn't get his whole budget. And with that, we will talk to you tomorrow.